Hari
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, 145, by saying, fear is afraid of you, Kunti shows her awareness of Krishna's power as the Lord. She also accepts as true that he was internally feeling fear. It would not be possible for her to be bewildered if she thought that he was only imitating being fearful. Thus, the word vidham bhanam in the previous verse cannot mean imitation, that the Lord only took the various roles while pretending. This is all about the bewilderment, right? That is there. 85, footnote. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates on the same topic in Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 145. When the Lord does not manifest lamentation or other like emotions, or when the Lord does manifest lamentation or other like emotions, it is because he is controlled by the love of his devotee. An example is seen in his description of Lord Ramachandra's pastime in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11.16. After hearing the news of Mother Sita's entering the earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was certainly aggrieved. Although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, upon remembering the exalted qualities of Mother Sita, he could not check his grief in transcendental love. Another example is seen in his description of the Lord's pastimes with Sudama Brahmana in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.80.19. The lotus-eyed Supreme Lord felt intense ecstasy upon touching the body of his dear friend, the wise Brahmana, and thus he shed tears of love. Another example is seen in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.31. My dear Krishna, Yashoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense, and your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes. And you were afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. So he's using the same verse, that the Bhagavatam verse. Right? So the point is that she's saying you're just imitating, then she would have already said before, like she says, just like an actor plays their part. And so there's no bewilderment, because it's not a bewilderment that actors play a part. They play a role, but they're not actually that. But here, what's amazing is the Lord actually takes on that mood, right? But that's because of the affection of the devotees, right? That's the point. The devotees are dealing with him in that way, and so therefore, he responds in that way. So that's what's bewildering, since fear personified is afraid of him. So here, now he's afraid of Mother Yashoda, right? So that's the point. But that's because of affection. Because fear personified is not out of affection, he's doing his duties, it's out of fear. Right? Yes? Yeah. In the next verses, 32-36, Queen Kunti discusses different reasons for Krishna's appearance. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings. And others say that, right, because that means in pious, the king's families, right? Because whichever line he's in, that line becomes exalted. Right? Others say that he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees, because he appears in that line. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya Hills. Others say that since both Vasudeva and Devaki prayed for you, You have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you. And so you have appeared to diminish the trouble. And yet others say that you appeared to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned soul suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. 32-36. In his purport to 1832, Srila Prabhupada makes this general observation that applies to all the reasons cited by the Queen. Because the Lord's appearance in this material world is bewildering, there are different opinions about the birth of the unborn. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he takes his birth in the material world, although he is the Lord of all creations, and he is unborn. So there cannot be any denial of the birth of the unborn, because he himself establishes the truth. But still, there are different opinions as to why he takes his birth, right? So that he's taking birth, even though he's unborn, that's not an opinion. That's not up for discussion, because he himself says that that's what's happening, right? But what is up for discussion is why he's doing that. Not that he's done it, but why he's doing it. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. He appears by his own internal potency to reestablish the principles of religion and protect the pious and annihilate the impious. That is the mission of the appearance of the unborn. Still, it is said that the Lord is there to glorify the pious King Yudhishthira. So then you have all these different aspects, but it's all in connection with devotional service. Because the pious kings, what kind of pious? Right? We don't hear, you know, that he's come to, for, you know, how you say, is it King Nala or who was the one that became the lizard?
Mriga,
you know, as a king. You know, just the regular piety, it was not a discussion. But the devotional, right? So those who to establish religion. Now here, religion means the actual religion of the soul. So it means sad-dharma, devotional service. But it also means the environment in which you perform that sad-dharma. In other words, the pious environment of varnashram. Right? So those who are following that to support them because devotional service goes nicely. And those who are going against that. Right? Because even the demons, many of them follow varnashram. So it's not just the varnashram, lack of varnashram that's the problem here, right? It's the lack of support of using varnashram in devotional service, right? Right? Ravana would just be another king, right? But he stole Sita, right? Does that make sense? Hiranyakashipu would be just another king, but then he harasses Pallad, he stops the devotional process, Brahman's doing all these different things. Therefore, there's a problem. Right? Kamsa does that. So it's not because they are big bad demons he comes to kill them, because Maya will kill them anyway. Right? It's not that he has to come for that. But it's because they're disturbing the devotional process. So it all goes together. To enhance the devotional process, to get rid of the obstacles, and to create a nice environment for performing devotional service. Verse 36 is a very important statement by Kunti Devi about the relishing of hearing and chanting of the Lord's glories in order that his lotus feet might be tangibly manifest for the devotee. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, "The Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, cannot be seen by a present conditional vision. In order to see him, one has to change his present vision by developing a different condition of life full of spontaneous love of God. When Sri Krishna was personally present on the face of the globe, not everyone could see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Because when you say, see Krishna, it's not about just seeing him. It's about seeing the person that you interact with based on affection, but you have to have that affection. Because otherwise, we have to remember Krishna is everything already. But what are we seeing? Are we seeing Krishna, or are we seeing varieties of material manifestations? You understand? That's the point. So, It's about seeing Krishna as the person, because otherwise so many people saw him. Right? Like that. Materials like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, Jarasandha, and Shishupal were highly qualified personalities by acquisition of material assets. But they were unable to appreciate the presence of the Lord, though they personally dealt with him. Therefore, even though the Lord may be present before our eyes, it is not possible to see him unless we have the necessary vision. This necessary qualification is developed by the process of devotional service only, beginning with hearing about the Lord from the right sources. Let's say like you have a very, powerful person or very famous or that, but if they're basically just moving through a crowd, no one in the crowd knows who they are, they won't appreciate. Right? But if you hear from someone who knows, then they'll say, oh, that's this person. Right? And then one starts to appreciate. Does that make sense? Because on our own, even if we see, we won't appreciate. So you have to hear. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, we have the example of our man with the burning bush, right? So he's seeing the Lord, right? But it's mentioned that, you know, for amongst the in the commentaries that he's only seeing this lower back of the Lord, right? Now he's just interacting with the Lord. So one could say, no, he's interacting with the Lord. Why would you say that there's some weakness here? But what is the weakness, according to what's just been said? He's seeing the Lord. He knows he's God.
He
doesn't listen to him, but even more important, who hasn't he heard from? Who? From Guru, from devotees that have affection, right? Means he's just seeing God, so naturally that's going to be a very awe-inspiring situation. And there'll be fear, there'll be all these different things, they're worried about all kinds of, you know, whatever may be worrying about. So, therefore, he sees the back, lower back of the Lord. He doesn't see his smiling face or anything like this. Now, if he hears from devotees who have devotion, then he'll see the Lord in that mood, then he's going to see differently. Understand? That's the importance of hearing from devotees. But at that time, basically, he was the devotee. You know, so... You know what I'm saying? So he's not necessarily hearing really from anybody. Because it's been, you know, between him and the previous ones, it's been like, I think, 400 years. So, you know, you're talking about a siksha parampara here. Right? You know? Yes?
Why is, we hear hearing, but then seeing is the prominent sense for perceiving the Lord.
It's actually hearing.
Yes.
But I'm saying you're going to see, but then that's only one. You know, you hear the Lord, how, you know, the sound of his flute or how he speaks, yes. Like that.
Well, I just, we're hearing conversation with some guests with Srila Prabhupada, and they asked Prabhupada, have you seen Krishna? But I was just wondering why is that the prominent thing of...
Because that's the next.
Huh?
That's the next.
Seeing is.
Hearing's the first level of understanding. Seeing's the second.
Okay.
Right? Experiencing is the third.
Okay, yeah. That's
what I need to know. Yeah. So that's there. But you hear, then you see, then you experience.
Okay.
But so most people in the world don't talk about hearing. They talk about seeing.
Yeah.
Right? You know, seeing is believing, not hearing is believing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You hear the train on the tracks, but you don't believe it. Only when you see it, then you get off the tracks. Okay. Therefore, even though the Lord may be present before our eyes, it is not possible to see him unless we have the necessary vision. This necessary qualification is developed by the process of devotional service only, beginning with hearing about the Lord from the right sources. Right, so then we hear who he is. Then when we see, it'll have some meaning. Like I think one devotee was saying when he first brought his parents to the temple. Then his mom was appreciating the, you know, very nice and elaborate flower arrangements at the end of the room. But she never noticed that there were deities there, just flower arrangements. You know, colorful flowers and, you know, like that. Bhagavad Gita is one of the popular literatures which are generally heard, chanted, repeated, etc., by the people in general. But in spite of such hearing, etc., sometimes it is experienced that the performer of such devotional service does not see the Lord eye to eye. The reason is that the first item, Shravana, is very important. If hearing is from the right sources, it acts very quickly. Generally, people hear from unauthorized persons. Such unauthorized persons may be very learned by academic qualifications, but because they do not follow the principles of devotional service, hearing from them becomes a sheer waste of time. It's not even just you get less effect, or, you know, you get no effect, it's just a waste of time, right? Yes.
It seems also that hearing is more available for, it's like for everybody, and seeing it's more difficult.
Yes,
for
that's
any
true.
Object
yeah.
as it is.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. I mean, it's because hearing, you just get people together, then you can talk and hear and everything like that. But to get them to see, then that's much more elaborate. You know, I can talk about, you know, like the person can tell stories, but if you want them to see the stories, then you have to have actors, they have to practice, they have to do a whole thing like that. And
they can physically close their eyes. You can't close their ears.
The connection means?
Oh, that you, when you're speaking to people, they will hear.
Oh, listen, hear. Oh, I see, because it's hard to complete.
Yeah,
oh,
you can't just.
Yeah, that's true. You know, unless they have an iPod or something.
That's the problem of the modern world. They always come up with something.
Yeah.
But learning isn't when you visually see and hear the best way of learning.
Means you first hear, then you apply what you hear. So shabda is always first. Then you apply it into pratyaksha, into the, you know, actually physically perceiving it. Right?
So that's why the devotees like to do dramas, because people can.
No, of course. But the point is it's the hearing aspect. Means, in other words, if you turned off the sound, you wouldn't get as much benefit. But if you turned off the visuals, you'd still get the benefit. You know, like I think there was. It used to be, I mean, this is a long time ago, they did these dramas like that, but they're recorded. So you get just the recording, you could get just the recording. So you don't see the acting, but then the recording is there, so you get the benefit.
There was the War of the Worlds, where people thought it was real?
Yes.
It was convincing.
Yeah. And somebody was telling me that they, well, remember as a, you know, kid, you had the radio. So when the shows come on, people go and sit there and listen and all. You said it was actually more attention and you got more of an experience from the radio than you did from the television, because they were there at that juncture when radio was the thing and television was just coming in, like that. And so they said the experience from radio is much more, because then the mind and you think up, so you get much more absorbed.
Or from this point of waste of time hearing from an unauthorized source, the Indologist is a great example.
Yes, a very
great example.
He means great, meaning it's a good example. Great not meaning that they themselves are of any stature. Like that.
The stature of the waste of time.
Yes. His point was an example of hearing about, you know, India's culture and philosophy is a waste of time, is hearing from Indologists like that. And we're sorry if there's anybody here who's, that's their degree.
Could it be that it's worse than a waste of time?
Worse than a waste of time. Can be, but those who are know more about it, you know, like let's say these Bhagavat Sapta people and all that, Mayavadis, that's probably worse than Indologists.
Yeah.
Unless it's an Indian Indologist who's from that kind of brahminical background. Yes. Then you're getting, that's getting great now. Is that? Yeah. I think what you're thinking about is when we were discussing before about in teaching, then Prabhupada is mentioning that writing is important. But if you write and see, you know you're going to hear, so you get benefit. You hear and write, you get more, and hear, write, and see. But that's just because of us, but it has to start from hearing. You know what I'm saying? The more things you add to it, the better it gets. You know, just like you have the rice, then you add to that some, you know, dal and some vegetables. It gets good. You add some lemon and salt and you add a drink and it gets better. But if we add all those and there's no rice, you know what I'm saying? You come with fabulous arrangements, you know, the nice table, the cloth, you know, candles, everything like that, some lemon in that, the plate, you know, all the silverware but nothing on the plate. You know, I say, but all the accoutrements are there and all that, you know, then good? Yeah? You'd be comfortable with that?
No.
No, okay. Getting mixed thoughts going at once. Yeah. That would be nice. Yeah. Yeah. The reason is that the first item, Shravana, is very important. If hearing is from the right sources, this acts very quickly. Okay. Generally, people hear from unauthorized persons. Such unauthorized persons may be very learned by academic qualifications. That may be either in the Vedic or in the modern. But because they do not follow the principles of devotional service, hearing from them becomes a sheer waste of time. Sometimes the texts are interpreted fashionably to suit their own purposes. Because that's the thing. It's what's in fashion. We may say it's like, no, nowadays what is called truth is fashion. It's fashionable to be truthful, and it's fashionable to be truthful about a certain thing, you know, whatever happens to be in vogue at the time. It's not that it's actually about truth, because if you check all the ones that are about truth, there's some other agenda behind it, like that. And ultimately it goes back, somebody's making money. Like that. That's the whole point. Journalism, they're making money. Journalism is there despite, I don't want to crush anybody's, you know, whole romantic ideology, but journalism and all that's not actually for truth, it's to make money. But because truth is popular, therefore they make money. If truth wasn't popular, they wouldn't make money. Right? If you think about it, look on the shelves, right? Tons of magazines, hundreds of magazines. How many are about news? Right? 2, 3, right? You know, and then they have to get specific. They have to be about economics, they have to be about this or that, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, National Geographic or something, you know what I'm saying? Most of it's just about what's fashionable. You know, whatever is your particular thing. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the whole point is it's not actually, it's fashionable. That's why Prabhupada is using this. Right? So they make it fashionably to suit their own purposes. So then because they want to make, let's say, Europe, you know, in other words, white Caucasians is prominent, right? So therefore, then you fashionably interpret the facts in that way. But if you look at the facts, it's like you have stuff going, it comes from over this side. There's tons of it going on. It is said, you know, here in China, the only continuous cultures that go back for 5,000 years. No one else has a continuous culture. It's always changing. It's always, you know, the whole, everything. There's no connection. Right? But fashionably, for facts, fashionably they do this. And it makes them prominent. And if you are not fashionably speaking, even though it may be more factual or real, you're, you know, put to the side. You understand? So that's what Prabhupada's point is. It's a waste of time. You won't learn about God from these people. You can't. That's not their business. Yes.
So then my advice, they do the same. They just pick the verses
yes.
to the purpose.
Yes.
It's not about everything. It's just few things.
Yes. Yes, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Like that. That's the basic principle, is that you just choose those parts that work for you. That's what's nice about Vedanta, is that there isn't a part beyond Vedanta. Vedanta is the complete whole of philosophy. Right? Everything that you want to discuss in philosophy, theology, it's there. So then there's nothing to not discuss. So it's not that any part you can't take and from there prove the existence of the Lord. Right? So they only take those ones that will be suited for them. So it's good. You know, like Jiva Goswami said. And so if they say it's by the blessings of Brahman, we have no problem with that because that proves our philosophy like that. You know, so it just makes it easier for us. You know, so. Therefore, first one should select a competent and bona fide speaker and then hear from him. When the hearing process is perfect and complete, the other processes become automatically perfect in their own way. So that's your burning. So if the hearing is proper, then the seeing, the touching, the smelling, everything else becomes proper. Right? In the next verses, Queen Kunti concludes her prayers by expressing her fear and her actual desire. Oh my Lord, you have accomplished your mission. More importantly, you have removed all speculative doubts about your identity and have provided the transcendental subject matter for hearing and chanting about your glories. Are you now leaving us, although we are completely dependent upon your mercy? Text 37. This is question 14. For Kunti Devi, the thought of separation from Krishna was excruciating. Srila Prabhupada explains. The lesson of the Bhagavad Gita and all the Puranas, especially the Bhagavat Purana, and are therefore inevitably connected with the history of the Pandava Mahatmas. For them, separation from the Lord was just like the separation of a fish from water. Srimati Kunti Devi therefore felt such separation like a thunderbolt. And the whole prayer of the queen is to try to persuade the Lord to stay with them. After the battle of Kurukshetra, although the inimical kings were killed, their sons and grandsons were still there to deal with the Pandavas. It is not only the Pandavas who are put into the condition of enmity, but all of us are always in such a condition. And the best way of living is to become completely dependent on the will of the Lord, and therefore overcome all difficulties of material existence. So that absorption in the Lord, that's the real point. So that's where the separation comes. Because the point is the material world is always going to be difficult. You know, here it's because of a war. But there's always something, right? You said, you know, that's the terms why there's history, you know, and things like that. You know, what about this or that? Oh, there's some history there, right? Or yeah, they got a lot of baggage, right? You know, so there's all, it means all these things are there. It's just the way it is. You know, so that enmity is always there because you're dealing with the modes of nature. The souls technically don't have any enmity, right? But the conditioned natures do, right? Conditioned natures are different. And so the environment for one is different from another. Like the polar bear would not like the Bahamas, right? People talk about it. They wouldn't even like Ibiza or, you know, how you say, you know, the Riviera. You know, I mean, they just wouldn't like it. You know, Bali. You know, it's just you name the place, they're not going to like it, right? You know, I mean, Antarctica, okay, cool. Plus, there's plenty to eat, right? So that's why, you know, they're on the north and the penguins are in the south. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any penguins, right? Like that. So, you understand, like that. At the same time as you know, you take the man who lives in Ibiza, and he probably is not going to find it, you know, very nice taking a trek to the North Pole. Right? You understand? So the point is the nature is different. Someone who likes mountains doesn't like the plains. Someone's on the seaside doesn't. Each one, it just doesn't work. You know, like I was told in Peru, you have the people who live up in the Andes and the people who are on the coast, because that's basically what you have. I think you have coastline. It goes straight up, and then people live up on the top. So the people on the top can't live down, and the people down can't live on the top. It just doesn't work for them, you know, because for the one there's no air, and for the other one there's too much air. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just so there's always going to be this element of danger, always going to be the element of enmity. Right. So therefore, the only way to take care of it is to be dependent upon the will of Krishna. By dependent on Krishna, that solves everyone's problem. Right? Doesn't necessarily solve their problem with each other, but it solves their individual experience of the problem. Right? And ultimately, as one advances, it even solves the material problem.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Still on the previous point of the bewilderment, Kunti.
Okay.
I heard once that which is like an external devotee admiring internal devotee, like Mother Yashoda is. Is it because Mother Yashoda is living the bewilderment with Krishna and she is observing that?
I wouldn't put it external and internal here, because then external tends to take it into like neophyte or something. It's just a different taste. She's Dwarka. Right? So Dwarka means you have your... means Dwarka is the beginning of Vaikuntha. But because it's in Goloka, it also has that, that it's connected with Mathura like this. So you have the... and you, the relatives are all connected to Vrindavan. Right? So you have the environment of rules and regulations, majesty, but it's softened by the five rasas. Right? So that you have something more there. So that that closeness, the friendship can be there, like Uddhava and all these things. Parents are there, everything's there. Vaikuntha, there is no parents of God. Right? There is no children. There is no, it's just, you know, everybody's servant. But in Dwarka, you see all the five rasas. Right? So, you're not talking, and these are eternal associates, so it's not, you wouldn't want to call them external. It's just a matter of the difference between that Dwarka majesty, you know, the rasa of Dwarka and the rasa of how you say it? Vrindavan. So the spontaneous is appreciated, like Bhishma's prayers. He's also talking about the gopis and things like that. So it's quite regular, but they appreciate it. Like that, Uddhava could appreciate. But it's just their taste. Just like, let's say, you're in a group with a bunch of friends, right? And nice friends and that, but one of them, you know, can be crazy. Right? Everybody appreciates it, but you can't do it. You understand? So it's not that the Dwarkavasis can't appreciate the affection of the Vrindavan, the Brajavasis. They just can't, it's just not what they can do. It's not their identity. You know, so it says, hey, you do that. No, I can't do that. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's relationship. So it's not internal and external. It's a matter of the full spontaneous that with one that has a mixed spontaneity. It's not a full, Dwarka is not fully spontaneous, right? At the same time, it's not fully rules and regulations. That's what it makes. So that's why it's, it works as a very... If you deal with Dwarka, you've dealt with basically everything else. You deal with Braj, you've dealt with the original. And if you deal with Dwarka, you deal with everything else. And you understand? All other realms are represented. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Krishna answers to Queen Kunti's request as follows. But I have stayed many days. Now I must go to Dwarka. I have necessary work there. Please give your assent. Right? So what is work for Krishna?
Pastimes
means interacting with the devotees and pleasing interacting with devotees. So he's been here with them, and there's six of them. Right? You throw in Vidura, okay, that means there's five, six, yeah, seven. Draupadi, eight. You know, there's a few like that. But Dwarka, it's a whole city, you know, full of devotees. And so that he also has that. So he's interact with them, solve their difficulty. Say, you know, and then now it's time to go, you know, to Dwarka.
But he could be in both places?
You can, but then where's the uniqueness of the pastime? You know, that he's here, he's there. Because the point is, by remembering him, you're always with him. But there's a different flavor, because there's the element of separation. Right? In other words, the devotee's never separated from Krishna, it's just which aspect of Krishna is being appreciated.
In fact, nobody's ever separated from Krishna.
In fact, nobody's separated, it's just whether you have that understanding at all. Yeah. Yeah, but he's also asking for permission, right? Because in the rasa, then she's senior, she's the aunt. To this, Kunti answers, but you are the person whose necessary works are already accomplished. Right? your intentions fulfill themselves automatically. That means everybody else has to go and do the work, but you, just by desiring it, it automatically happens. So how is it that you have necessary work that you have to do?
Sorry, please explain.
Yeah. The Pandavas had created suffering for many kings by killing their fathers or relatives. We depend on you, therefore stay here and protect my sons. Right? So there's necessary work here. Right? That's the point. You have necessary work there, but that's taken care of. You know, you get stay here and take care of this necessary work.
Right?
Huh?
Critics here reveals that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It hasn't hampered the relationship.
So that's Dwarka. Dwarka, they can understand that at the same time there's that intimacy. Yeah, there's a Dwarka scene. Why are they brothers? Mathura and Dwarka. Mathura goes to Dwarka. You know what I'm saying? They start there, but then it moves to Dwarka. Yeah.
I was thinking about this point that in Dwarka, Krishna actually expands for his queens.
Yeah.
He wouldn't stay.
Yeah, no, that would be too much trouble. Because that even if you spent, one night, so that's 365. How many 365 is 16,108? It's not going to work. Yeah, that's why it recommends the king that never has more than 8 queens. You know, it means there's the principal queen. There can be 8 others. But other than that, then it has to be, they have to be junior to that. Right? Because the queens, you have to deal with them individually. It means you have times when you have to work with them all together, just to, show each one's uniqueness. But others you can deal with in groups. Like that. So it's just, it means you can't take care.
Okay.
Like that. I also was just thinking about that. It was interesting, just a side point on that. Is I think why? Because it's specifically recommended for kshatriyas. Others it can do, but it's not so recommended. It's just like it's fine. But is that because the kings being in passion, their focus is so great. If it's on one queen, then they'll just get too distracted, like that. So then, therefore, if there's more than one, then it keeps it. You can't get too focused, like that. Plus you have the other thing, because of the extremity, then it creates more intensity. Because one queen's going to be intense, but if there's two, then there's a whole difference in how they're going to act. Because it's going to be natural. If the one knows the other one's doing this, she will do that. it's just, that's just the law. You don't have to, right? So then you balance that, because that'll be too intense. But so if you add a third one in, then that kind of throws that off a bit. So you have all these elements, but that's for them. And then there's if you're interested in spiritual life. If you're interested in spiritual life, then you stick to one. So that's the like that. So otherwise then. Okay, now, then Krishna continues. But Bhima and Arjuna, your sons, are very powerful. The king is Dharma, personified, and the Yadavas are your friends. You have no worries, right? Because, your sons can take care of everybody. Right? Because all the great warriors are gone. Who's left? Arjuna himself got rid of the, who were those? Some Saptakas. 25,000 Maharatis. They had a vow that they would, fight with Arjuna and either die in the battle, or kill him, right? Because that's a samsaptika. It's a vow. That's why they get first, challenge. Even though there may be others, the plan is different. There's a samsaptika. They always get first challenge. So 25,000, but he defeated them all. Right? And this is all when he has to go, meet, he has an appointment with Jayadratha, like that. So here is that. So who's going to be left? Who are the great Maharatis, right? Because they're all gone. So his point is Bhima and Arjuna, they're very powerful. And, Yudhishthira is Dharmaraj himself, and the Yadavas are there as your friends. So you don't have any problems. And then she says, who are we Pandavas with the Yadus having fame and ability without your presence? Similarly, without the presence of the Jiva, the senses have no significance or power. So just like, you know, if the soul is not there, then there's no meaning to the form. So the form of the Yadu dynasty and the Pandavas has no meaning without the soul, Krishna. Without your all auspicious presence, everything will become null and void. For nature's opulence is due to your merciful glance alone. Our kingdom appears beautiful only because it is marked with the impressions of your lotus feet. Therefore, when you leave, it will no longer appear so. It means it doesn't. It means physically, it doesn't necessarily change, but the perception will change. Right? Because that was the whole point before: is that Krishna. It's not that he looks different, you know, physically different for one person or another. It's just that how they perceive him, that's how what they're going to see. Right? So the kingdom now no longer will appear beautiful. It's because Krishna's there. It's beautiful when Krishna leaves. Then to the Pandavas, it won't be beautiful anymore. 38 to 40. At that moment, Queen Kunti realized that both Krishna's departure from Hastinapur and his staying at Hastinapur are unfortunate. Departure for the Pandavas and staying for the Yadavas. Since her mind will be disturbed in either case, because she's a Yadava. Right? You know, in other words, means her direct family on this side, you know, will be disturbed, but her family on that side will be disturbed, right? You know, so, yeah. Since her mind will be disturbed in either case, Kunti prays to cut off her ties of affection with both parties. Right? I pray that, you know, because then she's seeing as a problem because she's wanting to take care of the sons or what take care of other relatives. So now she just wants to cut off that. I pray that you will kindly sever my tie of affection for my sons and the Vrishnis, right? Not as devotees, but as sons or as relatives. Understand? It's not okay. May my unalloyed attraction be drawn to you alone, just as the Ganga forever flows towards the sea. 41.43. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to 1.8.42. Krishna says, then do you want realization of Brahman? So clever, right? Because you can see the intimacy here, because how he just kind of like jokes, you know, on the same time as real, but he's, you know. Because if you cut your affection for the Yadavas, you will cut your affection for me also. Right? Because he's also a Yadava. Yeah. And he's the nephew. Kunti answers, may my mind hold udvahatat, affection, rati, for you, without any obstacle. Udva means to flow strongly. The mind should not think of anything else, ananya vishaya. Because right? The vishaya is what you think of, what you're absorbed in. Right? Your devotees are non-different from you, and thus without affection for them, affection for you cannot take place. It is not possible that this could please you. Yeah. This I know, right? Because without pleasing the devotees, Krishna won't be pleased. Right? So he reveals himself on how much you're pleasing the devotees. Therefore, the focus on spiritual master, the previous acharyas, you know, the associates of the Lord, Srimati Radharani, right, the prominent heads of all the different rasas and groups, right, because they're the ones that are pleasing Krishna. We please them, Krishna's pleased. This I know. So people's interest in seeing God or knowing God, what they'll see. This I know. Therefore, let my mind have attraction for no one except you and your devotees. I prayed to cut affectionate bonds with the Pandavas and Yadavas, who are your devotees. But since it is a prayer in front of you, it means cutting only the material affection which arises from bodily identification. See, she's making the distinction. So the consideration of the pain that she'll feel because they're relatives, that she wants to get rid of. But the remembering them and the connection with them as devotees connected to the Lord, that she wants to remain.
Right. So this is a matter of vision,
if we see our relatives as just family, that is mundane. But if we see them as a devotees, then it's...
Yes. But then you also have to watch, is what she's pointing out, the mix.
Yeah. The mix is a difficult.
Because the mix is because it has that mundane side. It means for the materialist, he only sees family.
Right.
Right? The transcendentalist, he sees, you know, devotees. So it's in the middle, is what you thought. Yes, that's the part. So the mixed part. So it's a matter of cultivating the understanding. You know, it takes time. That's why family life is given 25, 30 years. And so then one can work all these things out. You know, because in the beginning, naturally, it's new, the absorption, the interaction, all these kind of things. But with time, then, you know, patterns set in. You know, it's understood, the personalities, what works, and all these things. So then one can start to contemplate the actual position. But at the same time, maintaining the devotee element. So because they're devotees, you do your duties. So it's because they're devotees, not because they're family. Right? But you have, as a grihastha, the duty to take care of this particular group of devotees.
Right.
Right? Rather than I'm a grihastha, therefore I take care of, you know, the wife, the son, the this and that, like that. But the wife, the interactions, the duties are on that platform. The son is on those platforms. So in the beginning, as one has attachments, then those are the necessary needs that are there. But as those attachments go, there's no necessary needs, but those are the basis of interaction. Because you have to have some relationship to interact, right? If you don't have a relationship, how do you deal?
But then in later stages, can it be just devotional service?
Yes, but it still will come through the medium of, because the devotional service still has to be, just like we say, devotional service, but what does that mean? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. So, therefore, you're going to interact with them, and they're close, you know, in the capacity as family members, but you have to make a distinction between what duties you are in. What's the medium with who?
Right.
Right? You know, so the wife, it remains wife, son remains son, daughter, you know, like this, you know, like that. But it's no more because you have a need to gain from those duties, or they have a need to gain from those duties. Right? It's just because now it's devotional service, but these are the natural duties. Does that make sense? Yeah.
What if they're not devotees?
Sorry?
What if they're not devotees?
Then from your side it will come to that, but from their side it won't. Your performance of your duties for them will be taking care of their needs. But for yourself, there's no need from the material relations.
I spoke with one lady in Kolkata. She said her husband insisted that she cook meat for him.
Yes, so, they do.
Okay.
The point is that's for him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She's doing her duties for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? And any reaction from that goes to him anyway.
Oh, okay.
You understand? She doesn't get the reaction because she's the dependent.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not that she came up with a bright idea.
No.
You know, it's like it's his. Yeah. It's his, like that. So that's the thing. It still works.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. She's speaking to Prabhuji. It comes from the Shreya, from cultivating that vision, that ultimate goal. You're a family member, so you're cultivating that.
Yeah, no, the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is detachment from the need. Right? But that leaves the forms and activities in place. So this is quite different than what we're used to. I mean, if we mention it, yes, it makes sense, but it's not where the focus lies. You know what I'm saying? Just like we were saying before, is that, you know, when you're dealing with God, then the element of developing love for Him, no one's generally going to complain about that. It's good, it's a nice thing, but that's not where the focus is. The focus is on, you know, I want this, I want that, and there's this obstacle, and God, please remove it, and all these different things. You know what I'm saying? So in the same way is that even though we understand it's that, the focus is on the forms and activities. So therefore we think that the goal is to give up not be involved with the family. Right? No, but that it's that you don't need to be involved with the family. Because otherwise, if you think it's the, if it's just giving up the interaction with the family, then the problem is you haven't actually solved the problem. Right? That's the point, you know.
Yes, my question was, in the interaction with the family, the interactions start to be based on that.
Okay. Yes, they start to be based on that. So the point is that you take where you're at the present, you understand what the goal is, and you follow the process, and it'll gradually get there. But the form, the Varnashram system, that's why it's considered a superior system, is it's so nicely designed that as you switch from, you know, grossly materialistic to purely transcendental, the activities and forms don't have to change. You know, you don't have to change each time. That's the thing. It's perfect. The same set. So that's why it's simple. Varnashram may be sophisticated, but it's simple. Modern is complicated, but it's not actually that sophisticated. It has some, but it's not as sophisticated as the Varnashram. You know what I'm saying? So you don't have to change. It just you have this one set. It just remains like that.
I had a recent realization on that. I was on my sister-in-law's house, and it was Puja time. So she woke up at the same time. She's an architect, she works. She took a banana to eat, and I took a banana to do my Puja. So it was the same bunch of bananas, the same kitchen, the same place. But she was looking her thing with some little granola, some little thing, and I was cutting the banana on the side. Krishna said, the same kitchen, the same bunch, the same bunch of bananas.
Yeah.
Why is the Krishna, why is this so...
Yeah.
It was because it was in the same place, it was so...
Yeah.
I thought about.
So that's the whole point. There's no need to transfer. Generally, you will take it that if you change that consciousness, you have to change the environment. So therefore, if you understand that there's no need in the family, then the first thing is to drop it. But then the point is that takes practice to be able to function in that way. Right? And so the point is then, you know, it's just you've had an understanding or a glimpse of an understanding, but the point is realization means if it's not there, one functions fine. You know? But the point is also that if one is in a position that one doesn't require, but there's no obstacles, then there's no need to change either. Otherwise, why would you change if something's working, right? Does that make sense? What is it? If it's not broken, don't fix it. You know what I'm saying? So if the grahastha ashram is going fine in devotional life, there's no need to not function within that. It's only when it won't, then. Like Prabhupada was there, trying to encourage the family to be involved. They just didn't want to be involved. He's giving Bhagavatam class downstairs. They're sitting upstairs drinking tea. Not sitting and not reading something, drinking tea, right? You know, you have to be drinking, you know, so just have to do something else, right? Like that. He wants them to be involved in the business so they can make more money. Their point is they only need as much money as they require. They don't want to make extra money, so they don't want to work harder. So therefore, he thinks, you know, the business is there, you're taking care of them, they get involved, then we can make more and do preaching. They don't want to get involved in that. Their point is we already have enough, why should we do more? So this is an obstacle. Now, if he was 30 years old, you know, he's got another 20 years, you know. But he's 55, so then it's okay, well then that's it, you know. Because now it's time for this. If they want to come along with him into the Vanaprastha, great. But if they don't, then he goes alone. Does that make sense? Yes.
So is that what Vanaprastha and Sannyas is for?
It means Vanaprastha is a natural, mature stage of Grihastha anyway. You know what I'm saying? It will naturally come to that position anyway. So then that's a safe position.
But isn't that a change of activities in the environment?
No, it's just a reduction of activities. Right? In other words, there's already enough saris. You don't need to get more. You know what I'm saying?
because it's that.
Well, he visited half the globe, so.
Yeah, you know, so it's, you know, you've proven your point. You know, like that. So now it's like, even if you don't buy any more saris, how many you have is going to last for another, you know, 10, 15 years anyway. You know what I'm saying? You know, and if now and again someone gives you a sari, haribo, right? You know, it's not like you have to make a concerted effort. Right? You know, and so in other words, the time goes into, to, you know, your sadhana and preaching and associating with devotees. You know what I'm saying? So all the time that goes into expanding Grihastha Ashram, that's not done anymore. That goes into sadhana. So all you do is maintain Grihastha Ashram.
What do you mean by expanding?
I just gave an example. I mean, does that make sense? Like that. And then the house, and then you got to have the extra, you know, extension out here, and then we got to convert this room into a bedroom, and that one into a bathroom. Right?
But nobody has to do that.
Huh?
Nobody has to do any of
that. That's the philosophy, yes. But what you can do is here. After class, you go out here. You're going to turn right, yeah, when you hit the road. And then when you turn the road, there'll be a little point, and then it'll get down where it kind of raises up and it's become brick. Mm-hmm. And from there, you can see basically a panorama of Mayapur. Okay? If you look kind of a little bit forward to the left, then you'll see the temple and the original scene that's there. If you look to the right, then it's what you're talking about. But it's there. Why? You understand? Because for the conditioning, it's necessary. Does that make sense?
Does it mean it's weak conditioning?
We've been doing it for a long time. So that's all we've done. So now the thing is you adjust it by taking whatever it is and connecting it to Krishna. And that means you don't have to change what it is, like what we're saying. It's just connected to Krishna. And then it works. With that. You know. And then there's always leaving it for the next generations and working with their conditioning. You know, like that. Does that make sense? Yes. Like that. Okay. Okay. May my unalloyed attraction, be drawn to you alone, just as the Ganga forever flows towards the sea. 41-43. So that's the point, is that may just be attraction for you and the devotees on that transcendental platform. That attraction, just like the river, the Ganga flows towards the sea. Right? Because it gets very big and it moves. It's not that it's stopped by anything. Right? It goes. So like that, and so all that material attachment would be given up. And we're talking about someone here who's quite detached, because of that, the time before she went to the forest with Vidura and that, then she was only eating once a month. Okay. So that's austere. Like that. You know, so it kept body and soul together.
Yeah.
You know. And then they went to the forest. That was while living in the palace. Yeah, then they renounced. But since it is a prayer in front of you, it means cutting only the material affection which arises from bodily identification. It is not cutting the affectionate relation with you. And when to cut that affection would cause bondage, just as the Ganga carries a full stream of water, Ogham, to the sea, to the ocean, the shelter of small and large rivers. May my mind also carry its affection to you, or the shelter of all the devotees. Just as the Ganga does not consider any obstacles on its course, my mind should also not consider any obstacles that may arise by thinking of you.
verses 44 to 52. Krishna accepts Kunti's prayers and hears the distressed words of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Sutta Goswami continues, and this is all just, you know, and we're thinking about, now look at this aspect, we're thinking that if I'm a devotee, then there should be no kind of obstacles, right? Right? Because it's a problem. But you know, as Yasha says, if it's a connection with Krishna, then it's no longer a problem. Krishna's just trying to leave. He's, I mean, and listen, here's his day, right? So, you know, first is that he's just about ready to leave. He's just said all the, you know, gone around, done all the regular things. Now he's going to leave. He has to take care of a nuclear problem. Right?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Means that, you know, here's the whole thing with Uttara and everything like that.
Yes.
Right? That being over, okay, all the things, then he's going to leave, then the queen herself comes.
Yes.
Right? You know, and puts all these different things. Right? Okay, now again he's going to leave, and now the king comes. Right?
Yes.
You know, with all his difficulties.
Yeah.
Right? So the point is for Krishna, obstacles are fun. Right? You know? Because he, being Satyasankalpa, anything he thinks happens. So it's fun, you know, when these things happen, it appears you're not in control. Right? So we want to be in control because we think we're God. Right? So that's not going to work out. So, you know, we might as well drop that one. Right? But the point is there'll be still be a problem unless we see it in connection with Krishna, because they don't bother Krishna. So if we see in connection with him, he's not bothered, we won't be bothered.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Verses 44 to 52, Krishna accepts Kunti's prayers and hears the distressed words of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Sutta Goswami continues, after hearing Kunti's prayers, Kunti Devi's prayers, Lord Krishna mildly smiled. And that smile was as enchanting as his mystic power. Still, he entered the king's palace at Hastinapur to inform the other ladies of his departure. Right? Because the ladies, that departure is done not in public, but in private. Right? It means in their area of the house. Because then they can relax, they can express their emotions, they don't have to worry about all the formalities. While out on the street, then there's so many things to worry about, so it's not actually, you don't get that full exchange. Yes.
So it means he didn't want to stay after she prayed?
No.
He was ready for you?
Well, the point is she's understood is that whether he stays there, if she stays there, the Yadavas will be unhappy, and if he goes to Dwarka, then the Pandavas will be unhappy.
So she
dropped it. That's why she said, therefore cut off the material considerations. Because being absorbed in Krishna, that's not going to create any problems, right? The feelings of separation, whatever, but you won't have any of the material anxieties that she's experiencing due to thinking of the Pandavas as her sons or the Yadus as her relatives. Right? So all that's left is Krishna and the devotees. And so then, you know, that you don't worry how well or not well it goes. Is that? At this time, Krishna was stopped by Maharaj Yudhisthira. Right? So now he's going into the palace, because he first went to Kunti. Right? Then he'll go see the other, you know, Draupadi and the other ladies like this. Then he'll go out, because then as just before going out, generally, that's where you have the formal of the men of the palace. You know what I'm saying? You know, just inside, you know, that main, you know, the entrance hall or that kind of a place or the court. Or you know, and it can continue when you just go outside into the public. So now the public sees, but you can do the final things there. Then there's the public as you go. You know what I'm saying? So you have these stages. At this time, Lord Krishna was stopped by Maharaj Yudhisthira, who very lovingly implored him to remain for some time. The aggrieved king had not been pacified, despite innumerable instructions given to him by the great sages, headed by Srila Vyasadeva, and even Lord Krishna himself. Being overwhelmed by the death of his friends and relatives, Yudhisthira was aggrieved just like a common materialistic man. The king lamented, "Oh, what a wretched fate has overcome me. I am the most sinful man, for I have caused the death of so many thousands of men. Even if I were capable for atoning for millions of years, I would not be able to escape the hell that awaits me. I have killed so many husbands, sons, fathers, and brothers. Thus, the enmity that I have created with women is so great that nothing can be done to compensate for it. Just as dirty water could not be filtered through mud, nor a wine-stained pot cleaned with wine, so I do not believe that this great slaughter of men can be counteracted by sacrificing animals. 44-52. Right, because what he did is, you know, he's doing the Rajasuta, means the, I mean, see, Ashwamedha yagyas. So his point is you know, the difficulty come from death will not be accomplished by death, like that. So here you see is that when he says a common materialistic man, what kind of common materialistic man are we talking about here?
Kshatriya.
A kshatriya, but any old kshatriya? Duryodhana would be worried about this?
No.
No. So extremely pious, you know, person, that he's thinking that to maintain his position as emperor, then somebody had to die. Right? And then he's thinking about the family relations and all those different things like that. Right? Duryodhana generally never worried about those kinds of things. So it just means very, very pious. Right? Very considerate. But he's thinking of that aspect of it. You know, the point is it's the Lord's pastime. So these who died, it means you have so many who were, you know, improper. Like the Duryodhana and his brothers were simply creating trouble for the world. They managed, maintain it, but it couldn't progress under their rule. Right? And then all the people who supported them, then there's problems there. So by them not being there, but he's looking at that more personal aspect. Right? But the thing is the Lord came to remove the burden of the earth, that was done. And so that's just how it goes. We're not the bodies, all these different things. So that from that aspect, therefore he's saying it's a, you know, common materialistic man. He's only looking at that pious element. Srila right? Prabhupada writes in his purport to 1847, King Yudhishthira, though he was not expected to become aggrieved like a common man, became deluded by worldly affection, by the will of the Lord, just as Arjuna was apparently deluded. Right? Because then you can hear the instructions and everything. A man who sees knows well that the living entity is neither the body nor the mind, but is transcendental to the material conception of life. The common man thinks of violence and nonviolence in terms of the body, but that is a kind of delusion, right? Because real violence and nonviolence is in connection with the soul. Everyone is duty-bound according to one's occupational duties. A kshatriya is bound to fight for the right cause, regardless of the opposite party. Right? So, therefore, he's doing his duty. It's a religious war. It's proper. So, there is no reaction. Does that make sense? There's no sin. In such discharge of duty, one should not be disturbed by annihilation of the material body, which is only an external dress of the living soul. All this was perfectly known to Maharaj Yudhishthira, but by the will of the Lord, he became just like a common man, because there was another great idea behind this delusion. The king would be instructed by Bhishma, as Arjuna was instructed by the Lord himself. Right? So then this whole pastime can take place. And then you actually hear, because otherwise, you have the documentation of administration and the proper attitudes and all the dealings. But Bhishma gives very, very concise, exact, like that. Not complicated. But it's not unsophisticated. Right? It's just very, very straightforward. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Because the point is if such a great personality, they're in illusion, then, and they're experiencing this, you know, attachments and all these things. Now, what kind of questions will they ask as opposed to an actual common man? Right? In other words, the common man presented with the absolute truth is not necessarily going to respond. But such a personality as Arjuna and Yudhishthira, they're going to respond in a very intelligent, thoughtful way. And then they're going to, through that process, go from the position of the materialistic person to the realized person. Right? So no one's going to do it better than them. No. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Krishna thought, since I am not staying here, I will make my devotee Bhishma happy by showing myself along with my followers to him, since he does not want to die without seeing me, and his death is now approaching. I will have him instruct Yudhishthira in order to spread his glories to the world. This verse conveys the wish of the Lord. Right? So it's all the plan, so therefore Yudhishthira is put in this illusion. So then in this way, then he doesn't actually go. He stays a little longer. Vyasadhyar Ishvare Hagyai means by Vyasa and other sages who either knew or did not know the above mentioned intention of the Lord. Krishna performed a remarkable action of entering Yudhishthira's heart and making him lose his sense of judgment. Right? Because he, otherwise, as Yamaraj, he knows exactly what to do in every situation. There's never a situation before this where he didn't know. Right? Krishna made him completely incapable of understanding the teachings of himself and Vyas. By having Bhishma enlighten him, the Lord announced to the world that Bhishma, his pure devotee, had more knowledge of Dharma than Vyas, other sages, or even Krishna. But because Yudhishthira had even greater praying for Krishna than Bhishma, Krishna, though going to Dwarka, stayed back with him because of his request. Having approached Yudhishthira, he then created the loss of judgment in Yudhishthira. Does that make sense? So, he's going to bring out the glories of Bhishma, but at the same time as, you know, the higher point, the reason, the real reason for staying is because Yudhishthira, the love of Yudhishthira, like that. So, yeah. That makes sense. So because of the Pandavas' affection, that therefore he's staying. But since he's staying, then he'll also bring out the glories of Bhishma. Okay? Then we have revision questions and essay questions. And then we have then it blacks out.
Yes.
So? Oh, I thought you were going to put your face in some sense. Yeah, that's all right.
Quick year.
Still going to come. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Steady Guide. Chapters 9
to 15.
Yeah.
One can't understand rasa without understanding particularly the Vedatattva.
No, you can understand rasa. It's just a matter of what level of rasa. It means Braj Bhakti can only be understood with the Chintavedi Vedatattva. See, otherwise, others are approaching the Lord in prema, but without a Chintaveda Veda Tattva, they don't see the Braja pastimes as Braja. They see Vrindavan, but they will interpret it or understand it in connection with the majesty of the Lord, that he's so great and wonderful that he also does these wonderful pastimes as Krishna and Vrindavan. Does that make sense? So they just see it as another opulence. Like that. But with the Chintaveda Veda Tattva, then you can understand the mood, because you have the contradiction is so great. If it's just majesty, then there's no great contradiction. Right? Because in here is that the Lord, for his pastimes, comes as these different forms and interactions with devotees. But it's not brought out that he actually feels and experiences those feelings. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing. Is that, in other words, the actor, they come close, or they make a very convincing, presentation, but it's not that they actually totally become right? You know, I mean, whatever it is, the Russian Walla has some idea that you kind of take that on. But,
Method acting.
Yeah, Stanley G, you know. So, but the only difficulty is that if that fully took place, everybody else on the stage would actually start freaking out because that, you know, he's going to be throwing at his own lines because he is the person. So he's not bound by those lines that are there, you know.
Yes.
You know, so in other words, you have to still maintain that. But in this point is he actually drops that. Is that something? There's also the element that you have is that since the Vedic philosophy is a chintaveda-veda tattva, it's not necessarily that these great acharyas don't understand that. It's just that they're only presenting a particular aspect of it. You know what I'm saying? So it is the common or standard understanding there. Like we see as Madhva, though, he's always talking two, and there is never any oneness on anything. When he's talking about relation in the spiritual world, then he's talking about oneness. You know, so it's not a... Okay, so then we have chapter 9, passing, we have Bhishma Deva in the presence of Krishna, 10, departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka, 11, Krishna's entrance into Dwarka, 12, birth of Pariket, 13, Dhritarashtra quits home. Okay, so chapter 9, the passing away of Bhishma Deva in the presence of Lord Krishna. Pratigya. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.9.22. Yet, despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I am ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. From the purport, the appearance of Lord Krishna at the deathbed of Bhishmaji is due to his being an unflinching devotee of the Lord. Arjuna had some bodily relation with Krishna because the Lord happened to be his maternal cousin. But Bhishma had no such bodily relation. Therefore, the cause of attraction was due to the intimate relation of the soul. Yet, because of the relation of the body is very pleasing and natural, the Lord is more pleased when he is addressed as the son of Maharaj Nanda, the son of Jashoda, the lover of Radharani. This affinity by bodily relation with the Lord is another feature of reciprocating loving service with the Lord. Bhishma Deva is conscious of this sweetness of transcendental humor, and therefore he likes to address the Lord as Vijaya Shake, Partha Shake, etc. Exactly like Nanda Nandana or Jashoda Nandana. The best way to realize a relation in transcendental sweetness is to approach him through his recognized devotees. One should not try to establish the relationship directly. There must be a vital medium which is transparent and complete to lead us to the right path. So here is the element is that Krishna is kind to everyone, but he's specifically kind to the devotee, right? That's the pratigya of this chapter, right? But now in that, why is because the Lord feels that pleasure in connection with the devotee. Therefore, we want to be able to appreciate and apply this point in the understanding. Then it's a matter of establishing Krishna's relationship with his devotees, not us trying to establish our relationship directly with Krishna. Yes?
Before you were saying that dealing with devotees, there's like the aspect of the conditioned nature and the dealing with the modes as well. And here it's saying that you establish the relation with the devotees rather than Krishna yourself. So
no, it's with Krishna through the devotees.
Yeah,
but it's not directly with Krishna.
I just find it hard to balance that, you know, that devotees have got conditioned nature and also I do myself, and then
it's just something you work with. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's just like a good example, that take anything that you're doing, right? What is something that you do? Because most things I say don't relate.
She makes garlands.
She makes garlands. Okay. So, now making garlands. Now, in the beginning, when you first make garlands, very first starting, you know, it's, there's so many flowers, so many colors, the needle, the thread, where is the thread, where is the needle, you know, make sure the needle's not poked into the end of your finger, you know, all these different kinds of things. And so it becomes very bewildering. Making the first garland might take a few hours to make. You understand? Why? Because you're just trying to understand the whole process and the balance. But if you just keep at it, then after a while, you can even be not really paying attention and make a garland. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And it goes very quickly. That's the whole process. So you just have to keep at it. Then all these elements you'll be able to balance. It's just like this. Let us say, okay, the soul of a devotee that's small in stature and the soul of the devotee in big in stature. Is there any difference? No. But when you're serving prasad, how much prasad do you serve? Yeah, you understand? The one small in stature gets less, the one big in stature gets more. Especially since he doesn't have a bowl, he has a bucket.
And the preparation is halal.
Huh?
And the preparation is halal. Oh,
yes, yes. I'll trade, you know. Yeah, you don't have to worry about it. Sorry?
The bread doesn't live on my temple, so it's bad.
Okay. So, but you understand the point? But there's always something like that. So that's the whole thing is there. You know? Does that make sense? You know, you have, there's, you know, some you know, guests come to the temple and this 2-year-old's going by. Now, he's also the same, the soul's of the same stature as everyone else, but you don't tell the 2-year-old to take them around. You understand? So that's the thing, is you deal with those aspects, because otherwise, if it's uncomfortable here, then that's what goes on there, though it is on the transcendental platform. So they do have forms, they do have personalities, they do have their situations, but they're not temporary, right? And so the point is in the past, expressing your affection for the Lord still has to be through that medium of dealing with individuals. So it's just a matter we learn, and they do it there for Krishna's pleasure. So we learn to do it here for Krishna's pleasure. So we're given the same opportunity. But the point is the medium is not the prominent element, but it has to be dealt with properly. Right? It's a matter of, you know, it's just like you want to write a letter. It's not about the piece of paper and about the ink and about the particular words or all those things like that. You know what I'm saying? It's about what you say. Now, you can add to what you're saying by the kind of paper and, you know, what kind of pen you used, or, you understand? But it's not about that. You understand? Yeah. So it's a matter, it's a balance between those things. Is that to get an experience or a result, you have to have an activity, and the activity requires forms, action, and knowledge. So it all goes together. It's one package. Does that make sense? Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 9th chapter, Bhishma Dev imparts instructions to King Yudhishthira on the subject of occupational duties and offers his last prayer to the Lord. Maharaj Yudhishthira, Krishna, and the Pandavas go to the battlefield where Bhishma is lying on a bed of arrows. Many great rishis also arrive, because they know something's going to happen here, right? You know? And Bhishma Dev properly receives them all. Because one may say, well, it's Bhishma Dev, but if we remember from before, who his teachers are. He studied under Brihaspati himself, under Sukracharya himself, right? You know, under Parasaram. Right, you know, so the guru of the demigods, the guru of the demons, right? So that basically covers the whole universe, right? Then studied under the Lord himself, you know, and then so many others. I mean, it's a huge amount of people that he studied from. And that's before he was returned to Maharaj Santanu at 16. So he's already perfected all this, you know. Yeah. So the great rishis will naturally come, because something's going to happen here, right? You have Yudhishthira, who's Dharmaraj himself, Krishna, who's the Supreme Lord, Bhishma, who's highly qualified, right? Something's going to happen. And Bhishma Dev, many great rishis also arrive, and Bhishma Dev properly receives them all, especially Lord Krishna, for Bhishma is aware of his glorious position. So even though he's on a bed of arrows, it's still not like he's the victim, and so therefore he doesn't have to worry about all this kind of stuff. No? You know, it's about, you know, he still performs his duties.
Right.
Yes.
It's also noticed that when the conversation comes to Srimad Bhagavatam or the instructions, it's actually open for everybody. But those who are interested, those who understand, they come. Because Bhagavatam is spoken in an open place.
Mm.
And the Rishis in Naimisharanya and this, you know, it's like, it's for everybody.
Yeah,
and it's
true.
Really nice.
True, yes. Yeah, and who's interested comes. Yeah.
No fees.
No fees. It's like Mangalarti. It's open to everybody. It's just who shows up. That's it. Yeah. Oh. Seeing the Pandavas, Bhishma enumerates all the sufferings the Pandavas tolerated prior to the battle. Bhishma then explains that such things could only have happened due to the actions of eternal time and Krishna's inconceivable plan. Bhishma describes the glories and actual position of Krishna. He appreciates that Krishna has personally come to be present before him at the time of his death. Sutta mentions that Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Bhishma about the essential principles of various religious duties. 23-25, footnote 1. In verse 25, the specifics of Yudhishthira's question are omitted. Therefore, this guide does not count it as a question under study. But in the Mahabharata, then it gets into great detail about it. In other words, here's the essential principles of various religious duties. So the transcendental aspects of those, that's going to be the main point of the Bhagavatam, because it's already been covered in detail in the Mahabharata. It's quite a big study, actually. Bhishma Dev first answers Yudhishthira's questions regarding the duties of a religious monarch, and then notices that the auspicious time for his departure has arrived. He thus withdraws his consciousness from this world and focuses on Krishna. Footnote 2. Bhishmadev's answers to Yudhishthira's questions are mentioned by Sutta Goswami in brief summary. Elaboration is found in Srila Prabhupada's purports to these verses. Shloka Anusharanam, summary verses. Verses 1 to 24, Bhishmadev instructs Maharaj Yudhishthira. Verses 25 to 29, Bhishmadev concludes his instructions and meditates on Krishna before leaving his body. Verses 1 to 24. In this section, Sutta Goswami describes how Maharaj Yudhishthira, Krishna, and the Pandavas go to the battlefield, where Bhishma is lying on a bed of arrows. Bhishma remembers all the sufferings the Pandavas tolerated and then explains such things could only have happened due to Krishna's inconceivable plan. Bhishma appreciates that Krishna has personally come to be present before him at the time of his death. Quote, Sutta Goswami explains to the sages that Sri Krishna could have easily pacified Maharaj Yudhishthira as the Paramatma within his heart. But Krishna wanted him to receive instructions from the dying grandfather Bhishma. This was the reason why Yudhishthira remained unsatisfied after the battle of Kurukshetra. The Lord's plan was to spread the fame of his pure devotee, even though he had not been relieved of his grief by the words of others. Yudhishthira would find solace and transcendental knowledge in Bhishma's instructions. In this way, Bhishma would be known by all as unexcelled in wisdom, even though the Lord himself was present at the assembly. Krishna knew, you know, so it's not an uncommon thing, like Vyasadeva is present when the Bhagavatam is spoken, you know, or even when the Mahabharata is spoken, like that.
Why Krishna wanted to glorify Bhishma in this way? It was because of Bhishma's desire, or Krishna wanted it?
Well, it's natural, because Bhishma is, you can say, of the Kshatriyas is there, he's the grandsire. You know, because the only one that would have been senior to him would have been Bahlika. That I know of, he's Shantanu's brother. So he would have been his uncle on the back. But otherwise, no one else, you know, you're talking a few generations here. That's why I always call him Grandfather Bhishma, right? Because he's just so, he's just from such previous generations. Because he won't die. He leaves whenever he wants. That's, and, he's half divine. So his study and everything is from the heavenly planets. And what he can do is also from there. So he even doesn't fully manifest, because, it has to fit into what's going on. Bhima did a little bit more than everybody else and got so much of, how you say, Duryodhana's ire. So you can imagine that he could do even way more than that, So here is then, it's a matter of Bhishma being the senior most, then as a king, then to be able to give that knowledge, that he's the one who's giving instruction within this would be a very natural thing. Yes.
Maharaj, you said Bhishma was half divine.
Yes. His mother's Ganga Devi. Yeah, the Ganga herself means she's the mother and Santana is the father. Does that make sense?
So, that she's a demigod?
Or? Yeah. I mean, from the material world, she's taken as a demigod. But the Ganga originates in is the transcendental water. Yes. This is from the Viraja, the expansion of the Jamuna. I think Jamuna is one of the others, expansion of each other. They're both there. Because in Vrindavan, you have the Ganga and the Jamuna. It appears that I'm not sure if it's in Golok or like that, then Ganga is actually a river, not just a lake. But here in the pastimes, it's just a lake. But Ganga is the older sister. But much of the time, the older sister doesn't mean that they're the original. It's just like Balaram's the older brother. Like that. But the Lord's plan was to spread the fame of his pure devotee, just like Krishna's already killed everybody, but the glory goes to Arjuna. Right? So the same way is that he's already instructed, but the glory of the instructor goes to Krishna. Even though he had not been relieved by his grief by the words of others, Yudhishthira would find solace and transcendental knowledge in Bhishma's instructions. In this way, Bhishma will be known by all as unexcelled in wisdom, even though the Lord himself was present at the assembly. Krishna knew of Bhishma's affection for the Pandavas, and so to please him, he had King Yudhishthira lead a very royal procession to the battlefield so that the grandsire could see him in a happy and prosperous condition. Because Bhishma always wanted it like that, but because he had committed to the throne, and then the throne was Dhritarashtra. The throne had not been Dhritarashtra. It had been that he just, continued as the regent. And then when Yudhishthira was born, then he took up, then he would have been committed there. But because it was arranged that Dhritarashtra sat on the throne, then he's committed to the throne. So then, but he always desired the Pandavas' welfare. So then Krishna arranged it. Thus, while being accompanied by numerous brahmanas, such as Vyas and Domya, Lord Krishna and the Pandavas arrived at the place where Bhishma was lying on the battlefield upon a bed of arrows, surrounded by all the great Brahmarshis, Devarshis, and Rajarshis, including Narada, Sukadeva, Goswami, and Parasuram. Right? So the Brahmarshis will be sons of Brahma, right? The Devarshis will be from the Devatas. And then the Rajarshis will be among the kings. Like that. So that, footnote 3. Bhishmadeva was endowed with the power of leaving his body at will, and his lying down on the bed of arrows was his own choice. I'm sure he could have just gotten up and walked off. but he decided, he's done his bit. Yeah. After getting down from their chariots, Lord Krishna and the Pandavas bowed before their grandfather, Bhishmadeva, who is the best amongst the eight Vasus. Received and welcomed. End of the sentence there. Bhishma Dev, because it was before their beloved grandfather, Bhishma Dev, who was the best amongst the eight Vasus. Hey, there it goes. But it's supposed to be Bhishma Dev, who was the best amongst the eight Vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there. He knew perfectly well all the religious principles according to time and place. So he received them, but according to time and place, that he's on a bed of arrows. So it means there's only so much you can do. But, you know, yeah, even that might have been possible. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, yeah, kind words, you know, things like that. So, but it's not, the thing is it's not about him, it's about his duties. Right, you know, if it was a regular person, then you know, if they're on a bed of arrows, then it might be a bit of the element of who's the victim here. Yeah. But Bhishma Dev, you know, he's not worried about it. Right, and Bhishma Dev is the best amongst the eight Vasus, because it means of all the eight Vasus, he was the leader. He's the senior most. That's why when it came down to it, that you know, the cow was attempted to be stolen. Then he gets the weight responsibility of it because he's the senior most.
He didn't steal it, things?
Hmm?
He was not the one who stole?
He's the one that put his hand on the rope. That's why. The others were there, you know, pushing or pulling or things, but he's the one who actually initiated it. Right? Because the point is the wife of the Vasus, you know, if she wants something very serious, who's she going to go to? Number 8 Vasu, number 7 Vasu, number 6 Vasu, number 1 Vasu, right? So that was Bhishma Dev, you know? So, you understand? So he gets the rap. That's why all the others, then they went back after having put, the curse that they had to take birth was there, but then they immediately went back because Ganga Dev would place them all in the Ganga. And so then they just go back to the heavenly planets because she's connected to there. You know, like the yogi can go down in the Ganga at one place and come up in another. So it's not a problem. Or one sacred river and come up in a different one. Right? So they can go in like a Gangotri, take a dip there, you know, come up at the Kumbh Mela, you know, there, take their bath, go back down and come up over there. Like that. You know, they do that stuff. Like that. Yeah.
It seems like when he was Vasu, all those Vasus, they're not here. I think they're not that special. Let's say, according to how Bhishma became very special in this mortal lila. Could it be? Because we only heard about Vasus in this aspect.
Yeah, I mean, they're not the lords of the directions. They're the ones that you always hear about. But yeah, but same time is that's the point is that even the demigod who's not that prominent, you know, then is so much more prominent here, because it's not that he chose that it was, you know, he could continue as a Vasu or he could go down and be grandfather Bhishma, right? You know, so you know it was kind of like part of the curse, so it was a package deal, right? But you see, if the Gandharvas do come, then they do something amazing. You know, you have that, the Gandharvas came down and decided that Duryodhana and Karna and that, you know, they're coming just to harass, when they find out where the Pandavas are in the forest, they're going just to harass them, because it's like Duryodhana, they went with great opulence. It wasn't just they went out just for a regular hunting. They took all opulence and everything just to show off that they have all the opulence, and now they're sitting out in the forest. So when Gandharva saw that, and since, you know, Arjuna had just been there, so his friend Chitrata, then he decided, you know, this is not happening. So then they just came and collected them all. It wasn't even like, you don't hear there was a great fight and this and that. They just came down and captured them, and that was it. You know, and so then, you know, there was no fight. So all of them together couldn't defend themselves, but then Arjuna alone defeated them and got them back, you know. Like that. Because Arjuna also, he's Nara of Naranarayan Rishi. So, you know, we're dealing with special people. You know, Draupadi's the goddess of fortune, you know, means Indra's wife. You know, the Pandavas are, you know, from from the one aspect. They were all Indras.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sense. So you also have the underlying element of the proxy war between the demigods and the demons. You know, so Duryodhana and Parthi were representing the demons because they said, you know, we'll enter all your bodies and we'll do the fighting. You know, and on the other side, then there are all the demigods. All the, you know, all the demigods that come down as the Yadus and all these other persons. So it's, there's a lot happening here. Yes?
I heard in a class with Prabhupada, he's mentioning Arjuna's Vishnu temple.
I'm not sure. I've always heard that he's Jiva, but, yeah. But in any case, he takes that position.
I was confused. He mentioned very briefly, and he's talking about the demigods. It's in London 73, by the way.
Well, maybe from the point of Narayan Rishi, mm-hmm. You know. So therefore, is they're in that capacity. So then you say, maybe as a Shaktivation, you know, avatar like that, or it can be an expansion of the Lord as Jiva, because the thing is, Jiva means servant also. You know what I'm saying? So we don't use the term so much, but let's like say like the Shris, then Lakshmi is Jiva. Not that she's Jiva Tattva, she's Shakti Tattva. But she's Jiva in that she is servant of the Lord. So she's the supreme servant, right? So she's the best. Then you have Garuda, Hanuman, Vishrakshena, like this, you know, and then, you know, it comes down from there. So you can also take it that we say he's Jiva. So that's always meant, the term is always used Jiva, but never Jiva Tattva. Then that can also mean Vishnu in the form of servant, if he's, you know what I'm saying? Or it can mean that Jiva Tattva is non-different from the Lord. So he's representing the Jiva Tattva, just like the Pancha Tattva are the five features of Lord Chaitanya. You understand? So it just depends on which aspect you want to bring out. Does that make sense? Yeah. Lord Sri Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, yet he manifests his transcendental form by his internal potency. This very Lord was sitting before Bhishma Dev. But since Bhishma Dev knew of his glories, he worshipped him duly. Verses 1 through 10. It is important to note how Bhishma Dev. This is going to go into a whole thing. Yeah, so then we'll stop.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta bhakti vrinda ki jai. Jai Nitai Gaura.